This program is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This podcast series is brought to you by Emerging Infectious Diseases, often referred to simply as EID. I'm Dr. D. Peter Drottman, Editor-in-Chief. EID is an open-access, high-impact, peer-reviewed scientific journal published monthly by CDC. EID publishes articles on new and re-emerging infectious diseases that occur anywhere around the world, so as to improve the understanding of factors involved in disease emergence, control, and prevention.
Welcome to the Emerging Infectious Diseases Podcast. I'm Candace Hoffman. On this episode, we'll discuss the paper, Thalassia Calopida Eyeworms in American Black Bear, Pennsylvania, USA, 2023, which was published in the September 2024 issue of EID.
I'm Carol Sobotek. I'm Assistant Professor of Clinical Parasitology here at the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, or PennVet. I'm a professor, and I teach parasitic disease from animals in different blocks during the vet curriculum. I also run the diagnostic lab, the clinical infectious disease lab, together with my colleague, Dr. Stephen Cole. He's a microbiologist, and I'm the leader of the parasitology section. So we provide diagnostic service for clients from the hospital and also for external clients outside of PennVet, so other clinicians, and technical support to Wildlife Futures Program from PennVet and Pennsylvania Animal Diagnostic Laboratory System as well. So I'm from Brazil. I got my DVM in Brazil. And I become a parasitologist before a vet, for sure. Brazil is a tropical country in South America, so it's the paradise of parasites. So during the vet school, I found this diagnostic parasitology lab in my vet school, and I fell in love about parasites and those very small organisms and complex life cycles. And I did my master's and my PhD over there, working with vector-borne disease. Then I moved to the US to do my residency at the Texas A&M University. And then Philadelphia to work as an assistant professor here. Parasites are fascinating. I'm biased, of course, but I think they are amazing. And we can learn, they can cause disease, of course, and we should be, and I'm concerned about that. But we can learn a lot from parasites. They are here before us. Parasite diversity, it's important, like animal diversity. And we can learn about evolution. We can learn about epidemiological disease, we can learn about transmissions, we can learn about infectious disease. And I believe that everything is connected. So animals, humans, and environment. So there is this interface between all of us and with all this changing in the environment and the climate with. This is going to be more and more common. So I think it's crucial to understand which kind of disease we have, which kind of disease those parasites can cause. How can we control? How can we do better to protect not only us, but our environment and our pets and other animals?
One of the parasites Dr. Sobotchek studies is Thalassia calopida. This parasite causes eyeworm infections and has an interesting history.
So this parasite was detected for the first time in China for two French parasitologists in 1910, a long time ago. But until there, like until like 2003, around 2003, all those cases were concentrated in the East Asia. And we had reports in different countries, including China, Japan, Russia as well, and other countries around there. But in 2003, researchers found the first case in a dog in Italy. And after that, a number of other countries also report Telazia infections, Telazia calipid infections in dogs, cats, and wild animals, including Germany, Spain, Portugal, and a number of different countries from Europe. Here in the US, a fun fact about this disease, it's because we found the vector first before the parasite. So the vector was found by accident in 2014 or around that, 2014 and 2016 in New York. And the first case of Telazia calipida in a dog from New York was in 2020. So makes a lot of sense, right? The epidemiology of the disease and the progression of the disease in the US. And since then, we are seeing like a number of different cases in dogs and cats across the US.
In 2023, Dr. Sabachik learned of an unusual case of Telazia calipida infection. The infected animal was not a cat or dog. Instead, it was an American black bear in Pennsylvania.
How did we found this case? So this is a very fun history. So after so many cases that we have seen in Northeast of Telazia infections in dogs and cats, I was thinking about like wildlife, because all the information that we have, it's from Europe, and over there, wild animals play an important role and the epidemiology of the disease. So I did what I do best, that is professional gossip, and I talked with my colleagues about, have you seen that? These, I explained about the disease, I talked about my concerns and shared some clinical case. And one colleague from Wildlife Futures Program talked with vets from the field, and we found that yes, they have seen a case of eyeworm infections, and all those cases were from November last year in American black bears. Luckily, they saved the samples from one specific case, and I was able to identify the worm based on morphology and morphological analysis, and we confirmed like this specific case in this population.
This parasite has been found before in dogs, cats, and other mammals.
Yes, so this parasite can infect different mammals and domestic animals, Telazia calipida specifically, because we have like different species of Telazia, but Telazia calipida can infect dogs, cats, carnivores, wild carnivores, and lagomorphs, so rabbits, and also humans. So all those cases that we have seen in the US before were restricted to dogs and cats so far. So this was the first evidence of infection in wildlife population.
People and animals that are infected with this parasite don't always show signs and symptoms at first.
So this parasite can cause not very specific clinical signs of ocular disease in both animals and humans. Most of the cases are subclinical or do not present any clinical signs at all, but can animals and humans can present like mild clinical signs like conjunctivitis, excessive lacrimation, or severe like corneal ulcers.
Conjunctivitis is inflammation of the eyes, sometimes referred to as pink eye. Lacrimation is the shedding or secretion of tears. Corneal ulcers, if left untreated, can cause vision loss or blindness.
So this is one of the concerns about this specific parasite, because first, it's not very easy to identify clinically because of the very specific clinical signs. And second, because it's zoonotic, so humans are susceptible as well. Although it's not very common in humans, they are also susceptible to this infection, zoonotic infection.
So, why is it concerning to find this parasite in a black bear?
I'm biased because I'm a parasitologist and a vet. My first concern is because until 2020, it was considered like an exotic parasitic disease in the US. Now it's not anymore. So this is my first concern. It's an emerging zoonotic disease. Second, because this specific parasite has a wide range of different hosts, so a number of different mammals are susceptible to this infection and can carry this parasite and can be a source of transmission as well. And the last point, it's because it's a zoonotic infection, so can cause disease in humans. So this parasite can affect like different domains, can affect like domestic animals and the general health of domestic animals, can affect wild animals and those population. And we don't know yet how much can impact this specific population in terms of conservation or animal behavior, and can also affect human health. So there is all those different concerns. Another concern is about the spreading of this disease. Since a lot of different hosts are susceptible, we potentially have a number of different hosts playing a role in the epidemiology of this disease and spreading this disease. Like in this case of the American black bear, bears can walk miles and miles every day. So the same bear that was positive here in Pennsylvania can also be a positive animal in New York, New Jersey, and all those regions. Besides that, bears can be found like from across North America, from Mexico to Canada. So this is, it's an evidence that this parasite can be found in all those different countries and regions.
Dr. Sabachik explained how the parasite uses different animals to complete its life cycle and spread.
Yes, so Thalassa calipida, it's a vector-borne disease and has an indirect life cycle. What this means? This means that this parasite requires a definitive host, that it's a mammal, that could be an animal or a human, and also an indirect host, that in this case, it's a fruit fly named Portica variegata. So as the name suggests, vector-borne disease means that this parasite is transmitted by a vector, so the fruit fly. And this specific parasite or this specific fly has a very interesting fact, life cycle. And the fun fact is that only the male fly can transmit the disease. We have female flies and male flies, right? And probably you are asking yourself, like, since this is a fruit fly, why they are related with us? But this specific fly occasionally feeds on lacrimal secretion. And this is when this fly transmits parasite to us or other animals. So an infected fly with the third stage larvae, that is the infected form, when they feed on lacrimal secretion of mammals, they transmit this larvae. And inside of our eyes, specifically in the conjunctival sac or behind the third eyelid, usually, they become adults and they are going to release more larvae. So another fly get infected when they feed on the lacrimal secretions of the infected animal, and the cycle begin again. When I say lacrimal secretions, means that tears. So basically those flies feed on tears from animals and humans. Why these specific flies feed on lacrimal secretions and why only males? Based on the information that we have and evidence that we have from Europe, this specific fly, the male fly, requires a higher level of protein in comparison with the female fly. So occasionally, this fly feeds on lacrimal secretions to get this amount of protein necessarily for reproduction. Since like fruit flies are involved in the life cycle, this is also an evidence or at least an epidemiological factor, because we need to have fruit or at least organic material in the region to attract those vectors, right? So this seems to be related with the fruit production of the Northeast. We have like productions of different fruits, and probably the vector distribution is why we have seen so many cases in the Northeast.
You may be wondering, should I be concerned if I see fruit flies buzzing around my fruit?
It's a great question. yes, we have a number of different species of fruit flies, right? In the case of Thalassa calypida, only one single species is involved, as far as we know, that is Portica variegata. I know in reality, it's hard for us to identify, oh, this is Portica variegata or not, right? Even for me, and I'm a parasitologist. So in general, I would say that avoid crepuscular hours flies. This specific fly has a peak during like specific temperatures, so around 70 Fahrenheit or 20 or 25 degrees Celsius. And if you have a fly around your face, just remove and avoid this contact with your face. Besides that, you are going to be fine. For some, again, all the information that we have, it's from HERO. So I believe we need more research here to understand how, the behavior of this specific fly in our region and in our biome, right? But as far as we know, fly seems to be more attracted by animals and large animals than humans. So in general, the risk is higher for animals, for dogs, cats, and wild animals, large wild animals, than humans.
If the risk is higher for animals, should cat and dog owners be concerned about this parasite? How would you know if your pet has it?
Usually, pet owners are very good on that. They can notice like a different behavior from their pets. But I think the first sign that they notice, it's the excessive lacrimation. But you are going to see like this kind of clinical signs of ocular disease, although most of the people are not able to describe exactly. It's enough to bring the animal, the dog or cat, to the vet, and the vet's going to perform an eye exam and it's going to see the parasite. So it's very easy to notice there is something, it's wrong, it's not correct as usual. The problem is when the parasite do not produce any clinical signs. So this that remains the animals that we cannot detect and we cannot treat, or we are not able to treat. So this is the challenging, because so far we do not have like commercial diagnostic tests available for detection of Thalassa, and the detection remains on the clinical exam only.
Dr. Sabachik stresses we shouldn't be too worried if we encounter an animal that might have this parasite.
Be aware about the parasite, but don't be afraid of the animal. I mean, the bear, yes, right? It's a bear. But don't be afraid that the animal, your pet or any other animal, is going to transmit the disease to you. It's not. This is not going to happen. We need the vector. So the fly, it's the only organism responsible for transmitting the disease. This is, I think this is very important to highlight, because people tend to be afraid to get disease from those animals. And in this case, they are susceptible like us. We know we are in the same group.
Should we be concerned about the spread of Thalassa calypida to new places and new animals?
The potential spread of Thalassa calypida to different species or geographic areas could have like several significant consequences for both animal health and human health. and can be like direct or indirect. I'm going to start with the domestic animals. So dogs and cats being susceptible or exposed to Talassica lepida can cause first ocular disease. So it's the first concern, right? And animals unfortunately cannot talk. So, and this specific disease do not produce a specific clinical signs. So veterinarians should be aware and should include Talassiosis in their differential diagnosis list. Why? Because this is going to help us first identify earlier this disease and avoid the progression of the clinical signs and potential like severe lesions, are going to avoid misidentification. So we can avoid like treatment with unnecessary antibiotics, for example. We can avoid secondary infections with the bacteria or other pathogens as well. So there is a number of different consequences of Talassiosis in domestic animals. In wild animals, my concern, it's more related first with the spreading of this disease across the country, because wild animals are distributed across the US and can walk miles and miles and be in different places in the same day. Second, the consequences for the conservation of those populations, because we don't know which kind of disease can cause on those animals and how this is going to affect their behavior or their ability to hunt or their ability to survive. So there is like a number of different consequences that should be investigated as well. And for humans, is the risk of a zoonotic disease. And again, it's a disease that should be in the differential list of physicians as well to avoid unnecessary treatment with other medications and diagnose this disease as early as much as possible.
We asked Dr. Sabachik what's next for research on Talassia calipida.
I think we have a lot of gaps here. First, we should focus on the vector distribution for sure and understand the vector behavior in those different environments, because we have the savannah environment, we have the urban environment. So we should understand if it's only Portugal variegata, only this fruit fly species involved in the transmission of this specific parasite, or we have other different vectors as well. We should understand the risk factors involved for the transmission of the disease, including like which areas are more susceptible to Talassica lepida infections, which hosts are also more susceptible to Talassica lepida infections, and why. We need to understand which hosts are involved or might play a role in the epidemiology of this disease as well, including not only dogs and cats, but wild animals. And we need to understand the consequences of this disease in all those different populations. So right now, we do not have data enough for that. I'm currently working in a research project collecting positive samples from domestic and wild animals to have this information. We don't know exactly the origin of this disease as well, based on like what we have, the molecular analysis that we have. This species, this parasite, seems to be identical, genetically identical to Talassica lepida from Europe, from domestic animals from Europe. But again, we need more data, right? We have a very, very limited data. And this is one of the reasons why I'm trying to collect positive samples. I think with those informations, we can start to understand how the disease it's spreading here in the US, and how can we prevent, and how can we control, and we can also help other people to understand the disease, so educate people to help themselves, like to protect themselves from those parasites as well.
Dr. Sabachik has this advice for future researchers who want to know more about Thalesia calipeda and other parasites.
First, talk with me. I always need help, and I believe research is a collaboration. I love to work with other people and have like different perspectives. I think research is not like an individual work. It's an interdisciplinary work, and we need to learn, and I'm going to include myself on that as well. We need to learn how to include other disciplines in our research, because this is going to help us to communicate better with our community and with other vets and other and physicians, and we can learn together how to control infectious disease in general, not only parasitic disease. And the control and prevention of those diseases is a collaboration of different groups. So I tell my students all the time, you need to learn how to talk with your clients, because your clients deserve to know about parasitic disease. They deserve to know about how to control, how to prevent, and which kind of pathogens they are susceptible to. So if you are interested in research with parasitology, it's an amazing field. There is a lot of potential. We have a number of gaps because we have more parasites than hosts in this planet. So for sure, we don't know enough and we have so much more to learn. I learn every day a different thing. And if you're looking for collaboration, just let me know. I'm always open to new topics.
We hope that this episode has gotten you interested in Thalesia calipeda and other parasitic diseases featured in EID, and that you'll become a regular reader like Dr. Sabachik.
Actually, I think like CDC in general does beautiful work telling people about infectious disease. I was in contact with Emerge Infectious Disease Journal since I was in Brazil. It was like a goal that at some point in life I'm going to publish at this journal. I think this case was a huge opportunity to publish. And I know this journal has a huge impact and a lot of people have access and look for information on this journal. I publish in other journals as well, more focused on parasites or veterinary parasitology, but I feel like remains restricted to a very specific group. And I believe that infectious disease should be open access to different people and different groups in a very easy way.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. You can read the Emerging Infectious Diseases Journal at cdc.gov/EID. You can also follow EID on X and Instagram at EID Journal and on LinkedIn at EID-Journal.
The conclusions, findings, and opinions expressed by authors contributing to this journal do not necessarily reflect the official position of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Public Health Service, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the author's affiliated institutions.
For the most accurate health information, visit cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO.